This is the Shanaki for April 5th, Episode 16, A Wolf in the Park. For more information about this week's story, visit goodwordswriteorder.com. Despite what the regular markings on the clock might have you believe, the truth of every 24-hour operation is that some hours are longer than others. What drives a man to Super Walmart in the middle of the night? Mere commerce? No. Surely, this is desperation. Putney looked like he had slept in his clothes. Of course, that was silly. He hadn't slept at all. He ignored his haggard reflection in the glass and focused on the long guns inside the case. So many. Putney had always thought of shotguns as a commodity, like sugar, salt, shotguns.
Hey, man, you need some help?
I'd like to buy a shotgun.
What are you going for?
The absurdity of it all hit Putney. Who is going to sell him a gun in the middle of the night, looking like a crazy? How was he supposed to answer the question? What was he going for? How long was he going to stand there without saying something, eyes flicking back and forth?
Man, are you okay?
Yeah, I haven't been sleeping very well. I'm a little, you know.
Shit, man, I know how that can be. They had me working the third shift, stocking a store, like to drive me crazy. And let me tell you, my old lady...
About the shotgun?
Oh, yeah, man. What you going for, Dove? It's always Dove season for me, if you know what I mean. I'm not saying I hunt out of season, but I'm not saying I don't hunt either. You know what I mean.
The clerk rambled on and on, glad to have someone to talk to.
Look, I need to buy a shotgun. And I'm trying to sell you one. Which one you want?
That one.
Man, that's a rifle. You ain't serious about hunting. Why you want to buy a shotgun anyway?
Putney gave up the facade. Why not tell the truth? He'd tried telling everyone else. Why not Roy at Walmart? I'm scared, he began. But before the truth could escape, Roy jumped in.
Ah, home defense. It's your baby right here,
Roy proclaimed, holding forth a walnut-stocked Remington Model 870. In the end, Roy had been a tremendous help. He held forth on all subjects ballistic, teaching Putney to load, aim, and fire the shotgun. And his plain-spoken wisdom was a surprising comfort.
It's a shotgun, man. You just point it and pull the trigger. Blam!
Shotgun under his arm, clutching a box of shells in a small paper bag, and $461.22 poorer, Putney scuttled out to his car. It had started a month ago. Putney got up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom. He poured a glass of water and paused at the kitchen window. He loved his home. Even though it was more than he could technically afford, he had bought it anyway. To hell with the perils of being house poor. He loved the place so much, he considered himself house rich. Putney took another sip of water. He secretly imagined that the park was his backyard. Out of a sense of magnificence, he opened it to the public. Of course, he never took credit for this generosity, but occasionally he would disguise himself as a commoner and survey his kingdom, as if Andrew Carnegie were to wander the stacks of one of his own free libraries. In the park below, a dark shape slipped free from a long shadow. Fascinated by what he saw, Putney forgot to swallow, cheeks full of water as he watched a large dog snuffling around in the frost. It broke into a loping run towards Putney's house, but when it got to the fence, it did something no dog could ever do. It put its front paws, or were they hands, on the top rail and vaulted over sideways, as a man would. He watched as the thing tore up a corner of his carefully planted flower bed. Putney's breath came short and fast through his nostrils. A white streak darted across the lawn, and the fierce, hairy thing was on it in an instant. Putney leaned closer to the window, then recoiled in horror as the creature tore a struggling rabbit in two. Putney spit out the water and then covered his mouth. There was no way the creature could have heard him from outside. Or could it? The beast looked at Putney and fled back into the shadows of the park.
911 emergency response.
Sir, you're going to have to slow down. There's a wild animal outside my house.
What
It might be a person. No, it's definitely a large dog.
A stray dog?
Well, it's not like...
Sir, you'll have to call animal control.
Can you connect me?
There's no one there right now, sir. You'll have to call in the morning.
You're not going to send anyone?
Sir, just stay in your house and remain...
But really, I think...
Dogs can't open doors, sir.
This thing is a monster.
Sir, I can dispatch the police department, the fire department, or an ambulance. But we don't have a monster department. Now, I'm going to have to ask you to clear the line.
Putney lay in bed, but didn't sleep. At first light, he examined his yard. His flower bed looked like a dog had been digging in it, but what he saw hadn't been a dog. Or had it? Putney skipped his morning walk in the park. By the time he reached his desk, routine had made the night before seem like a bad dream, which of course is what it was. A bad dream, only rational explanation for it. Still, he made sure to get home early. The days were growing shorter, and Putney wanted the benefit of daylight when he got home. That night he did not sleep. He laughed at himself and tried to rationalize the whole thing away, but fear doesn't live in the clever part of the brain. Fear is the humorless reptile that lives in the brain's stem. So once again, Putney wound up staring out at the park, anticipating the first gloaming. Am I completely cracked? He wondered aloud. Would they depose the king of the park for reason of insanity? Can you do that to kings? No. Putney was pretty sure they just killed kings. He saw that the dew had crept up on the side window. Never noticed that before. But when was he ever up at this time of the morning? Did that mean standing water under the house? He stared at it blankly. Then something on the other side of the window made a smudge. A big, wet nose. Putney's eyes focused through the moisture, and he realized the creature was watching him from the other side of the window. They locked eyes for an instant, and the beast fled, leaving only spent breath on the glass. That night, he got the police to show up.
No, I'm not saying it didn't happen. I'm saying I just don't know of no 7-foot-tall dog. What you need is to call the dog catcher.
The dog catcher was even less help. The ground had frozen solid, so there were no tracks.
Mister, I can't catch a 7-foot dog I cannot find.
That night, Putney checked into a hotel. He slept little and fitfully, dreaming that the creature was sniffing at all the hotel doors, trying to find him. The next day, his boss told him to go home and rest. Yeah, right. He took an early lunch and checked into a different motel. But as he struggled to get to sleep, a change came over Putney. The meek and benevolent king of the park began to get angry. Angry at himself for not being able to sleep. Angry at whatever had invaded his kingdom. Angry over being so afraid. Putney had enough. He threw a handful of hotel soaps in his bag and went to buy a gun. Heart full of newfound hate and courage, the king of the park stood his own watch. But the beast had disappeared. Every day at first light, he would begin a series of long, searching walks, imagining himself a great hunter, low on supplies and deserted by superstitious native porters. He pressed on in search of his quarry. With each afternoon, he had convinced himself he would track his nightmare to the ends of the earth. But at sundown, the fear set in again. And he would sit on his deck, protected by his blanket and armed with his shotgun. His greatest fear was that he might be crazy, that he might just be imagining the whole damn thing. He shook it off and scanned the park again. Nothing but shadows and bare trees in the wind. A month passed, and with it Putney's job and most of his connections to the outside world. Until finally, there was nothing left to do but face the fear that defined him. With the first snow, Putney struck out into the park, the king on the hunt in his royal preserve. For the first time in weeks, the wind had died down, and thick flakes filled the air. Low gray clouds bounded the vault of heaven and recreated the park, not as a snow globe, but as a perfectly mapped geometry of space, time, and destiny, a place where one could read the past in fresh snow. See inexorable fate hanging in the air. He wandered for hours, crossing and recrossing his own footsteps, the old prints filling with fallen snow, the new ones drawing closer and closer as exhaustion set in. And in the end, the wolf found him. He turned and there it was, dark and sleek, all too substantial in a world of white and gray. As he raised shotgun to shoulder, the beast charged. Putney waited until there was no chance of a miss. The beast leapt. Badly mauled, Putney crawled free from underneath the beast. The creature was finished. Unrepentant, it slipped into the next world. Putney feared that he might survive only to become that which he had just killed. He decided it was better to put an end to it before he was too weak from lack of blood. The police report made no mention of a dog or a wolf or any other creature, for indeed none was ever found. The coroner ruled his death a suicide, and the dry language of the report made it seem that a man's demons had gotten the best of him. What else were they to make of it? A lonely man, recently unemployed, a shotgun blast to the face. But what can science ever really know of men's demons and their conquest?